Thank you. And thank you to everyone here who's worked very hard, it sounds like, to make this happen. We all appreciate it. So I'm here today to talk about mine and my advisor's paper. We're both from the University of Connecticut. My name is Michael Fagan. My advisor is Mifei Khan. And we studied, or we ran a study, on Mechanical Turk to see what kind of differences we could identify between groups of users and not, or groups of users who follow and then don't follow four common security advices. And I'll get to more details as we get into it. But first, this doesn't need all too much explanation for this room, but sort of from the user perspective, they're having to navigate a lot of different threats. I think that's been kind of hammered home throughout the years here at SOUPS and at other conferences and in journals. Not only are there, you know, kind of social vectors like phishing, but there are more technical vectors like malware, which sometimes can use a phishing attack as well. But you have a lot of different threats that you have to navigate as a lay user, and sometimes these threats are even difficult for experts. In response to all of these threats, there's a lot of tools for users to utilize to help protect themselves. But we see there's still plenty of insecure behavior. Even though we have password requirements, people try their best to get around them. They ignore updates because they want to avoid a restart, as we saw in earlier presentations, which, if that update is safety critical, avoiding that restart may not necessarily be the best call. And in that particular scenario, you can actually see how that decision could end up having effects down the line. So if an individual doesn't update their system and it is taken over as part of a botnet, and that botnet DDoS's some popular website, then now they've affected a large portion of the internet community, at least in part, through their decision. And that goes beyond just those kinds of scenarios. Identity theft affects the businesses that are also affected, affects the government. They have to, as we heard this morning, very extensive reporting protocols just to get a handle on the problem. So by being better with security, users can help head off a lot of problems, not only for themselves, but for others as well. So this all kind of drills down to this very broad question, because we know that there are some out there that do utilize these tools. So every study, there are, of course, people who update and people who have good passwords. I think many of us are in this room. But why do some of us choose to follow these advices and others don't? And that's what we've tried to approach in the study. So from that very broad question, we jumped right into a literature review because such a broad question must have been addressed elsewhere. And of course, this entire conference addresses this question to some degree or another. The biggest, focal point of the literature review that we performed, and more details can be seen in the paper, was on this rational choice perspective. So it's been commonly suggested, not improperly, that users are making some balance of the benefits to their following a security advice. So having a strong password versus the costs, having to type in that long password. Then there's also this focus on the significance of risk outside of just standard benefits and costs. When you're talking about security, you're really almost implicitly talking about a risk. You know, you're being secured from a risk. And in this particular scenario, I'd argue that that's distinct from a benefit or a cost. It's almost both. It's kind of in between, where you have the cost of the risk if you were not to follow the advice, or you have the benefits that you receive by avoiding such a risk. Next, there's some emerging literature around social motivations. So this has been less focused on, I think, in the usable security field, from what I can tell. But one notable example is Das et al.'s 2014 work that showed that peer pressure can really cause behavior change, or can at least motivate behavior change pretty strongly relative to a lot of the other things we've seen people try. And then finally, the literature usually boils down to comparing good versus bad actors, but we tried to buck the previous literature that has generally focused on experts and non-experts. We don't care if you're an expert necessarily. We're looking at people who follow the advices that we target and then people who don't follow those advices. So our study, as I just said, is hoping to compare, or did compare, those who follow these advices, or at least report following these advices, to those who report not following these advices. And I'll get into more details onto the exact advices in just a second. We used a rational decision framework to frame our study, as I alluded to, cost, benefits, risks being the core there. But we also wanted to dig a little bit into some qualitative data, not extensive qualitative data, really just one question that asked people why they made their decision, as simply as that. We collected an initial sample from Mechanical Turk of 764 users. That initial sample, they were responding to our screening survey that asked them if they followed or didn't follow our four advices. Then we used that data to break them up into eight groups of 50 each. One only had, so people who didn't update, there were only 47 eligible participants in the full sample, so we couldn't contact a full 50 there. But in the end, not all 50 ended up replying to our follow-up survey, which includes the deeper questions. So those variables that we were focusing on, like I was just talking about, are these three common security, or four common security advices. Three of them are from experts. One of them is a folk advice. These are all mine from prior work. So as you can see, you know, software updates, using a password manager, 2FA, and then changing your passwords frequently. Now, the decision model encompassed 12 variables based on all these concepts I just discussed. By that I mean we have our three components of benefits, costs, and risks. Then we have our two target groups, or at least the target effect, which is how do your decisions, how does it affect the risk to you or the risk to other people, the benefit to you, benefit to other people, and so on. And then we also have our two behavior contexts. So we ask both groups to rate these for both following and not following each advice. And as you're about to see, that required slightly different variable definitions when it came to our survey, because one group was going to be reporting the cost, benefits, risks to the best of their ability, while the other group would have to project, because they would be asking them about the decision that they didn't make naturally. So the following variables are defined by the A phrasing for the yes groups and then the B phrasing on the slide for the no groups, while not following is defined by the B and the A phrasing, so the opposite. Now, an important note here is we're purposely comparing projections with reported ratings because that's precisely what we're trying to dig into. What about your projections about the decision could possibly affect the decision you end up making? And then how does that line up to what people who, in theory, have more grounding to their reports, how does that compare to their experience? So using those variables, we expanded into these five hypotheses, which the first four have, for both following and not following phrasings. And then the fourth one is about the qualitative data. So just a quick summary, hypotheses one, two, and three basically say that we expected participants would agree with their decision. So if a person said they didn't update, they would probably say that the benefits of that were higher than the group that does update says the benefits of not updating would be. Just natural, we expect that to be intuitive. People aren't going to be doing something unless they thought it was in their best interests by a cost-benefit analysis, at least we'd assume. The fourth hypothesis talks more about the qualitative data, or specifically about the qualitative data. Here we expected a security and convenience trade-off to become prominent, just naturally because of the context. And then our fifth hypothesis is about the social individual difference. So we expected the social considerations to be lower than individual concerns for all of our decisions. So this slide presents the demographics from the demographic questions we asked our participants in our actually these demographic questions were asked of the full sample, but we only report here in the presentation. The full paper has, or we can provide the full sample's demographics if anyone's interested, but we're more interested in, well, what were the demographics of the groups that we've created? Particularly, are these groups comparable? So is there any bias possibly in any of these demographics? And using statistical testing, we found that the only demographic variable where there was any difference between groups was security expertise, but those ratings didn't end up being correlated across the entire sample with the ratings in the rest of the survey. So even though this indicates that there might be some correlation in decision outcome, the security expertise didn't seem to influence individuals' actual ratings when it came to their concerns. So we took that to mean that most of these, that these samples are pretty similar and comparable enough for the purposes of this study. So, first, we looked at the perceptions of benefits. This table, or this slide, reproduces two tables from the paper that discuss specifically the individual benefits of following and then not following each of our four advices. Again, remember that we expect the benefits of following to be higher by the yes groups, those who follow, and then the benefits of not following to be rated as higher by the no groups, those who do not follow. We ended up finding that these were significant differences from the yes and no groups across both the benefits of following and not following, with fairly strong effect sizes, though, of course, those could always be higher. For social, we found, well, the social phrasings of the benefits, we found no significant differences. All the p-values were greater than 0.14, in fact. So when it came to social benefit, it didn't seem that either groups or any of the groups of either persuasion could see any social benefits to these decisions. Then we also looked at risk. When it came to the risk of following, which may not necessarily come off as an interesting aspect, but when you think about it, if people think that the following the advice itself is risky, this is, you know, actually very interesting. And I guess somewhat unsurprisingly, the only one that registered a strongly significant value here was the risk of following, as in using a password manager. So, and as we saw in the qualitative data, and I'll get into that a little bit more later, that was likely due to the fact that people don't like the single point of failure that comes along with password managers. We specifically asked about Morris, or we asked people if they used secure password managers, not just, you know, do you use Chrome to manage your passwords in an unencrypted fashion? We asked, do you use something like LastPass, and included a few other examples in our questions. So even with those more secure solutions, people, at least a significant number of people, still saw, at least of the no group, still saw that as being particularly more risky. So that we expect was a big reason why the no group for password managers might have decided the way they did. Interestingly, changing passwords also came up somewhat significant, indicating that some people thought changing your passwords regularly was risky. For not following, we found much stronger significant differences, which again is more expected since most of those who would be following these advices are trying to protect themselves from a risk. So you'd assume that they project themselves assuming more risk if they were to change their behavior, whereas the no groups deciding not to follow probably don't see much risk in their decision. And that's exactly what we found here in the results. A note here is for hypothesis 2B, unlike all of our other hypotheses, we projected that only some of the decisions would have a difference for risk of following, which did match up. The reason for that is we have me and my advisor had collected prior data that suggested that for things like updating, most didn't see a real true, a big risk of following other than possible inconvenience. But for password managers, we had gotten comments related to this risk of using a password manager. So really, password manager was one of the advices we had in mind when we made this hypothesis. And then finally, for the cost-benefit analysis, we looked at costs. And here, the ratings, as you can see, were all much lower than before. So, medians between generally around 1 and 2, some getting as high as 3, whereas earlier we were seeing medians 3 to 4, indicating that most folks don't seem to see much cost in these decisions. What's also interesting is that in some cases, so the cost of not following, for example, which we'd assume some people could be conflating with the risks, so the cost they would incur if they didn't follow and succumb to some risk. For 2FA, we actually didn't see any difference in cost of not following for the individual, even though it was pretty strong for all the other advices, which we thought was interesting, maybe possibly that the individuals, the two groups somewhat agreed on those costs of not following. And then for cost of following, we didn't find, we only found limited strongly significant values, indicating that it's possible both groups have a good idea of the of what the costs involved are. Since the no groups are reporting similar costs to the yes groups, we assume the yes groups have a good rating of the costs since they're actually incurring these costs by following the advices. So just to summarize all of that, what we really want you to take away from these numbers, other than the nitty-gritty, is that there exist these perception gaps among the yes and the no groups. So though, you know, they have a decision gap, of course, and these perception gaps could give us some insight into the reasons for these decision gaps. So, for example, everyone seemed to think that their decision was more beneficial to them. Again, expected, but it's still interesting because if the no groups are seeing their decision as beneficial over the long term, and the yes groups are also seeing their decision as beneficial in the long term, there could be context-specific reasons that they're having these different perceptions, or it could be a case of you don't know you're at risk until you get taken, and then you become a yes. And so this is definitely up to more study to determine who is right here in estimating their benefits. The same goes for the risks, and this is kind of tying into this. The flip side of that, you know, both think they're avoiding some kind of risk. The yes groups definitely think they're avoiding a higher risk than the no groups report. But who's right? We, as prior work has noted, and I think there hasn't been much change on this, we don't have a real good, hard set of numbers or advice to give people on saying, okay, well, this is quantitatively the risk that you're going to face if you don't update. That's a really hard thing to pin down. And finally, as we've kind of been highlighting, as to be expected, the participants generally agreed with their decisions. So as I said, we also collected some qualitative data. This was coded by, unfortunately, a single coder due to logistical constraints, using a code book developed by another to avoid bias in the development of the code book, at least. We will be going over this data more deeply with more coders to extract more findings. But for the purposes of this paper, the qualitative data was meant to kind of fill in some of these questions left with the perception gaps. So for updating, we see that there's this desire to increase security among the yes groups, which is good. But there are also a lot of people who are just doing it to avoid bugs and issues. So they don't really care about the security benefits they're getting. At the same time, on the flip side, the no group, they're really looking to avoid an inconvenience. A lot of them say they don't need the updates, they don't want to do the updates, it takes too much time, and some of them even boil down to just saying they're lazy about it. They admit that they just don't have enough care to go ahead and put in that update. Password managers, the central point here was convenience for the yes groups. They really thought there was a lot of convenience there, and I guess those who, and even some of them said that it might have made up for some of the security risks, but others did mention a security benefit. And then for the no group, again, the real consensus there was this avoidance of the security risk. 2FA was a little strange. Most people say they like the increase in security, but a good number of people said it just kind of feels better in one word or one way or another. This amorphous, they know they're doing the right thing. So that's sort of interesting. And then, of course, the cost related to 2FA is the big reason for the no groups. And then for changing passwords frequently, most people who are doing it are trying to avoid theft. And then most people who don't are just trying to avoid having to change their passwords all the time. Finally, our individual versus social concerns. As we predicted, we were correct that the social considerations were always lower than the individual considerations, showing that people really aren't thinking about how their decisions are affecting other people. And in statistical testing, these held up, including when we statistically tested these differences internally in the groups rather than just aggregating everyone. So our key points are these perception gaps between the yes and the no groups. They both think they're making the right call. We should probably be trying to correct one of them at least, or correcting ourselves to adhere with one of them. This added convenience can be really powerful. That's a really important takeaway. Password managers are seen as insecure, but a lot of people still use them because of the added convenience it gives them. So if we can wrap convenience into secure solutions, then that's going to go leaps and bounds more than any user interface design. Giving people a real benefit outside of the security is a great way to get people to start using something. And then finally, these low social motivations should certainly be addressed because there is definitely a social component to your decisions, and you should be considering those, and the research indicates that that could have a big effect. You know, there are some limitations with the paper. It's collected on Mechanical Turk. The samples could certainly be bigger, and an extended framework could give us more insight, but that's all I have time for. So I'm welcome to any questions.
I'm wondering, for some of these types of advice, users are often nudged or prompted by the services to take that advice. So two-factor authentication, changing one's password. And I'm wondering how those sorts of nudges may or may not have affected your business, or if that's something you considered.
So that's not something we explicitly considered. I would say that it would have been handled in our study by the fact that we collected a random sample. So those the effect that that would have had on our individual participants would have, in theory, been randomized by our sampling procedure. But your point is important, because a lot of these key points that I've discussed here can be addressed in these nudges. So they can become useful for adjusting these perceptions on an incremental basis. Constantly reminding someone, kind of like peer pressure, could help increase their awareness of all this. And using the data here and then further data from these kinds of studies can really help inform what kind of nudges or what you're going to say in your nudges to best motivate people.